And if you've been with us for a few weeks now, we've been looking at the core tenet of mercy and justice. And we've looked at this through a few different lenses so far, right? Through the idea that mercy is intentional kindness and justice is a restorative right act for those that can't speak for themselves or those who can't act for themselves. And so we've looked at this really from a global lens with the CEO of Compassion a couple of weeks ago, Claire Steele, right, on how we can be involved in releasing kids from poverty in Jesus' name, right? That's a global initiative that we can all be a part of, which is amazing. But then last week, Joel Abell spoke to us about how really mercy and justice is this tangible effect of something that happens when we see the person in front of us, right? When we acknowledge them, when we see them as beloved. And we're going to continue on with this journey today with a few different people that have been working in this area in our community and communities around our region for a long time. And so some of them you're going to be very familiar with, maybe some of them you don't. And so we're going to watch a short video that kind of shares a little bit of an introduction of who they are and what they're about. So let's go ahead and watch that right now.
My role is community development, so that's basically developing programs for the community. I interview and talk to the community members, see what they want or would like to see in the community.
Yep.
And if I can do it, well, then we get together and work together to make it happen. So, but also at the centre here, we have a family support program. We have a team of volunteers that will go in and work with vulnerable families.
Yep.
For like, yeah, financial counselling or, you know, just help with the kids, do some shopping, stuff like that, cooking. Because what we found is a lot of families struggle with all that. You know, we have Keys here as well. So that's Keys Early Intervention Homeless Service. Joss's role is basically to stop people from becoming homeless. And we also do a homeless service. We feed, you know, I suppose weekly. Well, we could feed up to 150 people,
yeah.
You know, 200 people a week. And that's providing frozen meals. And we also do a meal, which we call the One Roof Program, on a Tuesday and Thursday night, which consists of a meal, hot shower, laundry, hairdressing every 6 weeks, a doctor's and nurse's service every week for people, anyone in the community. It's not, again, not for this, for the homeless people. It's basically anyone who can't afford to go and see a doctor. They can actually come here and see a doctor here. So the concept of the garden is people in the community here, which is high density, as you can see, they come over here, pay $1 a week, and they can grow their own veggies and fruit or herbs or whatever they want, and just come over and pick it, take it home and cook it.
So the mission and call of the Lifehouse has not really changed in these last 19 years. We're here to offer practical care and support to vulnerable people across the coast. So those families and individuals that we are helping come referred to us through different social welfare agencies, and they're people that are, you know, really at risk. They're very vulnerable. They may be in housing crisis through domestic violence, mental health or homelessness. We have the huge privilege of helping to make that empty house into a home, thereby facilitating a new beginning full of dignity and hope. We gift everything that is needed for a fresh start: beds and linen, lounge and dining suites, fridge, washing machine, dinner sets and cutlery, and maybe even some pretty things to make this their own special place. We have a team of 30 people that serve at the Lifehouse, doing an incredible job of handling all the incoming donations, as well as beautifully serving the clients that visit and the customers that regularly pop in.
This is our 27th year of going out and visiting rural and outback families. About 2,500 families over 1.2 million square kilometres.
Field volunteers go out, we go onto the properties, you have face-to-face visits, you spend time with these families, you get to know them and build a friendship.
We're just trying to keep people going at the moment, just keeping them alive, keeping them encouraged, motivating them, just trying to help them get up and fight another day. So that's the major thrust behind what we're doing this year. You regularly bring in a load of goodies or whatever, or go and spend time with people and they just burst into tears and they're just so grateful to have someone that actually is stopping in to call in and say hello.
Oh, it's just great to have them turn up. I mean, they always bring something with them, but we don't really worry whether they just as long as they turn up just to see them. And even the fact, like, they bring out a lot of stuff that helps us, including clothes, food, everything else, but just the fact that somebody thought of you and prepared to drive out here and say hello, how are you going? It really makes it worth it.
Every day is different. In fact, I say to people that every year is the same, but there's not a day that's the same. So my week has a mix of programs. So maybe breakfast programs, lunchtime programs. I got a bunch of Christian crew who meet each Tuesday lunchtime, sort of a connect group. We got another program at 1 o'clock for the juniors, which is just chaotic and noisy, but it's connecting them with each other with some good volunteers. We've got a mentoring program, so we've got adult mentors that come in, they volunteer their time to connect with a student. They've just had their session today. But I also do a lot of pastoral care stuff. Add to that meetings, fundraising, you name it. It's a very full and busy role. I'm rounding up a group of boys to go on a trek, actually, early next term. We do a 50K hike through Comdale National Park. I do a driver's ed course. We take them up to Gympie for 2 days to learn how not to die in a car. So there's such a variety of the things we do. Yeah, it's never boring. Adolescents, students are going through such a hard time these days with the breakdown in family. I see so many boys who don't have dads at home. Media, social media, the internet is a huge thing for young people today. In my day, if someone said something bad about me, I wouldn't know, you know, and I'd go home and I didn't care. Whereas now, someone says something bad about me, I go home, it's on the internet, it's on Facebook, it's all over the place. It's just consuming. So for them to have someone that they can confide in, that's not someone who's going to get them into trouble, so we're not disciplinarians. Someone that can build rapport, have fun with them, so that they know we're a safe person to talk to. Great outcomes in that sense, but it's a relational-based thing. It's really that simple.
So I want to invite our friends Bill and Melissa Close, Mark Ellis, Ruth Jeffs, and Stu Cran to the stage if you want to come on up. Can we give them a big round of applause again as they come? Thank you. It's great to have you guys here with us this morning. I want to say thank you. Thanks for being here. We've got some time where we want to ask some questions and get your perspective on a few things. I'd like to start with you, Stu. I noticed that you have very little hair, and what hair you do have is gray. Is that because you work with students? Yes. Testing? Yes,
yes.
Yeah. I will say I want to honor you for that. I was a youth pastor myself, and I know you have been in this role for some time, but if you could just share with us quickly, maybe like how long have you been in student ministry, and what does that mean to you in that space of mercy and justice? Like why do you continue to do it?
I've been doing youth work for 32 years. I became a Christian when I was 19, and the experience I had when God changed my life, because I was a very rebellious teenager, did a whole bunch of things you don't really want to know about. And then God broke into my world, revealed himself to me, and everything changed. My perspective on who I was and what life was like changed, how I treated other people. And I just long for young people to have a fresh perspective of themselves, whether that's a revelation from God or just a sense of seeing the bigger picture, do you know? And those choices that we make have consequences. And so for me, what keeps me going in terms of justice and mercy, when I think of justice and mercy, I think of the cross, The cross is a great symbol of both of those, in that it's a symbol of God's holiness. So justice must be done. You do the crime, you pay the time, and death, the payment has to be made for justice. But it's also this amazing picture of mercy, in that God died on that cross to pay the price for us, which, you know, it is amazing when you think about it. When you really get that, there is freedom from fear and shame for us, when we really rest in the reality that even though I deserve punishment, God gives me love. And that affects how I treat young people. I want to live each day with that perspective of grace, of love. Doesn't matter who you are, where you come from, what your background is, God died for us in our variety, in our sin. So I want to demonstrate that in everything I do.
That's great. Thank you. I think that something similar I would hear from you, Ruth, when we talk about meeting the needs of our community. It's not so much about giving people what they deserve. It's about giving them maybe what they don't deserve. And so can you talk to us a little bit about that for you? Because you probably haven't been in the Lifehouse as long as Stu's been doing youth ministry, but I think the heart behind what you guys do is something similar, but in a practical way.
Yeah, the Lifehouse actually celebrates its 20th year this year, which is amazing. And the role I've had has just been, yeah, it's cool, hey. The role I've had's just been the last couple of years. And like you said, it's that the acts of mercy that are in a very practical way. And we've been looking at Micah 6:8 a lot this last month. And I love the amplified version of that where it talks about loving mercy. It describes it as intentionally being practical with kindness. And that's the thing that we get to do at the Lifehouse. So it's kindness, whether it's in a conversation, a kind look, or kindness in the things that we offer and we give to people, and they're very practical things that we can do.
Yeah, that's great. Also for you, Mark, it's a practical kind of service that you offer down at the Neighborhood Center. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, I suppose that at the Neighborhood Center, I think for us, we started work with I've worked in the homeless sector for about 20 years. Yeah. But at the centre, we've been probably just doing it for about 6 years now. And the reason why we started that is I was coming into work and I was actually stepping over people as I actually walked into my office, because my office is on the outside of the building, and I'd be just walking and going, good morning, good morning, good morning, good morning. And all I hear is, oh, bugger, he's here. You know, we've got to get up, we've got to go. And yeah, over time, it was just there. Basically talking about it, but for justice and mercy, for me, it's a mix of restorative justice and rehabilitative justice. And what I mean by that is restorative is more around looking at the victim and what they need and how we can actually work with them to actually, I suppose, get over the offence. And the rehabilitative stuff is about working with the perpetrator and working through their needs and what they need to do to actually, with the anger management or anything like that. So for me, it's a mix of that. And going by what you said about, Jesus on the cross, it's basically, he could have called down, hail and brimstone, wiped everyone out, but he didn't. He asked for forgiveness, and that's a bit like restorative justice about that. I suppose it's about that reconciliation and stuff like that. And I think with that, that's how I look at justice and mercy when I work with people that are homeless or marginalised, because they're people.
I think that's really important for us to maybe take a moment and really dig into a little bit deeper. And that's kind of what we were talking about last week, is actually seeing people, showing them dignity. What are some of the ways in which you can maybe share with us and help us understand what that's like to not take dignity away from people when we're giving these acts of mercy and justice?
Yeah, I think it's more around about asking the actual person what they need, what they would like. They're the expert of their lives. We're not. We may think we are, but we're actually not. So for me, every person that comes in the door, I get up, I shake their hands, regardless if they haven't showered for a month. I actually get up and just shake their hands. A lot of them want to give me a hug, so we have a bit of a hug, and then I go, you bloody stink, But yeah, I think it's about that. It's about that, just treating them as humans. You know, they're not animals. You know, we actually treat our animals far better than we do our homeless people. Yeah.
Thank you. Bill and Melissa, share with us just a little bit about the journey you've been on in reaching the rural and remote communities, because I think a lot of what you do stems from this acts of mercy. You've even spoken about that in the past.
We are primarily an outreach organisation, and our major goal is taking the gospel to rural families. Once upon a time, I would just love to preach at everybody and tell them how to live their lives and all that sort of thing. But God has an amazing way of changing your life and changing your perspective, and something we've learnt on this journey, 28 odd years. Our very first trip out, we ran into families out west where everybody in town told us everybody is fine. Nobody needs any help out here. They're all going good. You know, they're getting through the drought. And we ran into two families that same day that had suffered suicide. One young family lost their dad to suicide, and another family, an 18-year-old son to suicide, all on the same day. And I'm thinking, how can this be happening in our own backyard? And I think the thing that really got me first up was there was absolutely no support for those families at that same time. They had to go and bury their own dad and all that sort of thing. And they were on their own, and everybody in town was saying they're all good out there. And we have seen that ever since, you know, in a lot of different fronts. And so both mercy and justice are all things really important to us. It's probably the centerpiece of what we do. As in, we go out and you support the people that are going through hard times. And also, there's lots of injustices for our rural families, and some of the things that happen with banks where they foreclose on innocent families, and government policy that has been weighed heavily against rural families because of whatever is a particular policy decided in the city that should be applied to all, that sometimes is very impractical for rural families. And so you go into bat for those rural families and be a voice for the voiceless. And so, yeah, that's been pretty much our journey.
So talk to me a little bit about that getting through that wall of we're all right, we're fine, there's no problems here, but then seeing the reality of it, how do you maintain or begin relationships with people who maybe weren't ready yet to say anything to you?
And look, that is particularly true with rural people, and anyone that volunteers with us would know that takes time. Our overall strategy on any given visit when we're out visiting rural families is our first goal always is to build a friendship. So we just go there, we build friendship with the goal of making ongoing relationship and then ultimately discipleship. Something we've found, if you get the friendship and relationship right, the discipleship's really easy. But if you try to bypass that, it's just really, really hard work. And on each given visit, you're trying to help people on three different levels. We try to help people on a physical level, an emotional level, and a spiritual level. But it takes time. I think our guys, they led a guy to the Lord the other week. 20 years we've been visiting that property to reach that guy. And it's just been a long, long road of mercy, you know? Just loving on him, supporting him, and being there for him.
I visited your office, and we saw it in the video. There's this amazing map, and that map is littered with different colors of pins. Can you tell me a little bit about what we saw on that map and what that means?
We have some awesome volunteers, and I'm telling you, all of us here would probably say the same. You can't do it without an awesome crew around you. Some of them have been an active part of this church for a long time, which we are very grateful, and which is why we really wanted to be here today. But each one of those areas headed up by a couple, and so we look after 26 different regions like that, and there would have been 26 different colours on that map, and they develop a team around them, and they virtually pastoral visit that whole region, and that may incorporate absolutely anything you could imagine that could be happening to those families.
It could be they could be dealing with the banks, they could have someone in their family with cancer, it could be any scenario that you could possibly imagine they take on, and they basically pass to that area. And if we ever come into that area and they think, well, who are you? They only know the local guy. And John and Lynn Caverhill, who are an active part of the local church here, have run bases for us for a long time. Like I was trying to work out before, I think about 12, 14 years they run a base for us. And they're just an awesome local couple, very unassuming. They're just quite happy being in the background. But I tell you, as base leaders, they pastor as good as anybody and love on the families and support them. So
that's amazing. Stu, I want to come back to you, even in that same vein, talking about volunteers, about pastoring. You head up, you mentioned it a little bit earlier, a mentoring program, and that's essentially almost the same thing, pastoring, caring for, being with. Can you share with us a little bit about that mentoring program and what it means to you and the school?
Yeah, sure. There are so many students at school who don't feel as though they've got a safe adult to talk to, someone that could be a soundboard for them. So our mentors are that for some young people. But far more than that, I think having someone who loves you, someone who accepts you, someone who gives you their time and attention, and particularly if they want to do that. So their attention they give you is something that they do freely. It does something to your soul. You know, it does something to your sense of self-worth and that sense of value, personal value. And so I've been doing this for, running that for about 12, 13 years at school, and I've seen young people who wag school, they're truant, so they stay away from school, but they'll come in for their mentor, then they leave again. Do you know, the value of this relationship they have is really significant. And I see their esteem, their value. You know, sometimes kids say to me, why would this adult, who's not getting paid for it, why would they come in and spend time with me? Like, I'm not worth it. Why me? Do you know? And the fact that this adult is there week after week after week, just giving, enjoying the time together, being a sounding board, giving some, you know, wisdom, but also just enjoying that time together, over time does something really significant in you as a person, yeah.
Oh, good. Thank you. Ruth, can you share with us a little bit about your volunteer team and kind of the stories that maybe you're able to share with us about what keeps them coming back, doing the things they do week in, week out? You've actually increased the amount of time that the Lifehouse is open over the last couple of years. Can you talk to us about that?
That's because need has seen that we need to grow to facilitate more and more requests for assistance. I think for this week coming, we've got 7 appointments already scheduled, and they can range from being, you know, just clothing to full house fit outs. Our volunteers are amazing. They are happy to get in, muck in, and do whatever needs to be done. But I know the gold for them, the treasure, is when they get interactions with the clients that come on visits. And we had a lady, she was 29. She came on Wednesday with her 14-year-old and her 3-year-old, came with her social worker, and she'd just received housing. She has been homeless, and there are different degrees of homeless. Mark would be able to speak to that a bit more. She hadn't had a permanent place to call her own for 2 years now, and that's with a 3-year-old. She's moved interstate from shelter to shelter. She doesn't have a car, so she didn't get to sleep in a car. She would sleep in parks, under bridges, a 29-year-old, 14, and 3. But she's got housing now, which is awesome. And the 14-year-old was going for her school interview the next day, so she's going to get to engage in school again for the first time in a long time. So things are looking up for this little family, you know. They've got a hope and a future. Suddenly all of these hindrances are no longer a blockage to hopefully will be a new beginning for them and a richer, fuller, more engaged life. In community and as a little family. So, yeah, we can't do it without our volunteers, though. So grateful for all of you.
Thank you. Mark, we saw in the video that you'd started a neighborhood garden. Can you tell us about how that's going? It's coming into the wintertime now, but how are things going with that?
It's growing.
Yeah, awesome.
So But we have the community garden where people around the place can come over and grow their stuff and that. But it's also part of our, I suppose it's a, we call it the urban farm. And it's for people in the community, restaurants and stuff can come in and buy herbs and lettuces and stuff straight out of the garden. So our horticulturalist Simon will go around and you just go, I want that, and he'll pick it for you there and then whack it in a bag and then you go, you know. But again, it's around volunteers. You know, we have quite a few volunteers come in and give Simon a hand to do all the heavy lifting and stuff. So, yeah.
So we're coming into our cold season. What ways can we get involved to help with you guys and what you're about during this winter season?
I think it's just around, if you can, donate some sleeping bags. Tents are no good because they're not allowed to pitch them anywhere. You can buy their little Austrail pop-up sort of swags, which don't need to be tied up between trees. So even them, clothing at the moment, we've got a whole shed full because people just keep on donating, which is fantastic. So maybe just sleeping bags bits and pieces like that, some food, because we have a lot of families that are on the brink of homelessness. Either pay the rent, feed the family, don't pay the rent, so they can come to the centre and get some food. I think the centre, just to let these guys know, we don't get any funding whatsoever to work with homeless people. So it's all donations and all volunteering. So the government gives us nothing at all. So it was just a program I started up 4 years ago. So,
thank you. Yeah. So if we want to do that, we can just maybe see you after.
Yeah. I'll be around here somewhere, awesome. Having a coffee and
so good.
Come and grab me and have a chat.
As we finish up, I want to ask everyone the same question. As you go into this season, what is there something that you're excited about something that's happening that is coming up, and literally, how can we get involved? Bill and Melissa, can we start with you?
You want to share? You go. Oh, all right. She's actually a better speaker than me. Look, our thing we're really excited about right now is a lot of our rural families have had rain. That's been a real plus. And I'm telling you, it's been a long, hard road of drought. About 2 years ago, we had something like 200-odd tragedies, as in suicides, farm tragedies, whatever, in just a bit over 18 months. And it was really hard just going to one funeral after another. And we were quite rattled by that. But I am so, so grateful for rain and for a good season. And we're just believing that that's going to continue. But something we're seeing right now is every trip out, we're seeing people are just so appreciative of all the years of support when it was really tough. And we're also seeing every single time that there's people coming to Christ. Every single trip out, there's reports of people coming to the Lord, and we're grateful for that. And I just think it's because of that continual just love and mercy and grace and consistency. Key word, consistency. Just being consistent year in, year out, decade in, decade out. I think you can win people over and just love them and love them into the kingdom. So, yeah.
I tell you what would make me excited, and that would be if we actually shut the Lifehouse down, if we didn't need the service that we offer. But that's not the reality, and things do look quite bleak with the housing rental crisis on the coast at the moment. So I guess for me, the things that I'm grateful for are the trust that so many agencies put to us, that they trust us to care well for their clients. And I'm grateful for those interactions where we get to be a part of the new beginning and a hope and a future for people.
I'm actually excited because we don't have any shelters on the coast for men. And in 2019, we had a homeless man murdered in Maroochydore. And he was in my office Friday afternoon. I said, have a great weekend, see you later, see you next week. And I got a phone call early Sunday morning saying, this has happened. And if we had a place for him to go, he may be still with us. So with that, I actually started to fundraise for a sleep bus for men, and it's actually a bus converted out with sleep pods in it. It was $100,000, so in April I actually achieved that goal, and the bus is now being built. So probably about November or something, there will be a bus here for men to get on board. But in that, there'll be other people around sleeping because there'll be security guards and stuff. So it'll be a safe place for them to go. And we started a campaign to raise some money for a women and children's bus, because women and children's homelessness has risen 13% since 2019 here on the coast. And I've got, there's a foundation that are going, they've rang me and said, I went and done a bit of a chat to them, and they're going to donate. They haven't told me how much. And there's a big business on the coast here that are actually going to look at it as well. So hopefully by next year, we'll have another sleep bus here that will house women and children for a little while. It's a temporary solution, it'd be something. That's what I'm looking forward to.
So good. There's so many things that I am appreciative about in my role and the opportunities in the school. Having been there 16 years, there's a lot of favour. And really, there's an opportunity to do anything we want. It's amazing, the opportunities that are there. And the need is great. COVID, like we're talking about COVID, the impact on families has been massive. And then that demonstrates in the behaviours of the students at school. So I appreciate our volunteers. We had a great crew of volunteers helping with our mentoring predominantly. And there's a bit of a stream of people coming in for that. So if anyone's interested in giving an hour and a bit of their time each week, just come and chat to me afterwards. But if you've got an idea of something, an interest that you'd love to be involved in with young people, our school community is pretty big. Come and have a chat to me. So I don't know what's happening that I'm excited about. There's so many things. My wife and I have been renovating our home since 2017. It was a job 1,000 times bigger than I ever thought it was going to be when I started. If I had known what I was getting into, I wouldn't have started. But part of our motivation for that is to provide accommodation for year 11 and 12 independent students. And we're on the home run. So I've got a year 12 girl who's couch surfing at the moment, who needs a place in August. So we've got a bit of a deadline there. So I'm pretty excited. It's been 3 years of every weekend busting my gut to get this house finished, and we're on the home run. So that's lovely. It'll be great to see what God does in that space in the future, yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, all of you. Yes, please. It's our desire and our prayer that you would know how much we love you and your ministries, all of you. The people that you serve are our people. It's our community. It's our region. And I'm so grateful that you've made this mission of mercy and justice your mission, that you've taken these words seriously. I love, Mark, how in the video, you said, it doesn't matter about your story. If you're hungry, I want to feed you. Like, that to me is so powerful. And Stu, thank you. Thank you for being that guiding light in a place that is difficult. Year after year, season after season. I've been with Stu where students have come up to him that he didn't recognize because of the amount of years that had been since he'd seen them, but they remembered him. And it was amazing. And so thank you. So we do. We want to give you another round of applause, and I want to pray for you guys. Could you stand with me as we pray? We're going to move into just a time of reflection and worship after hearing these stories. My heart is that you would take this time to worship, that you'd take this time to reflect on what's been said. And again, this is not just what they think about justice and mercy. It's about what we think and how we're going to leave this room today maybe a little bit more inspired to be a part of what God's doing in this world, to see the person in front of us, to get involved in a ministry or a service that can bring life and love to people that are hurting and lost and broken. So I want to pray for you guys. Thank you, Father God, for these different ministries. God, for Care Outreach, for the Life House, for the Neighborhood Center, God, for Mountain Creek School and the chaplains. God, thank you for Stu and for Tanya. God, thank you for all the different things that are happening in their worlds. God, I pray that you'd continue to meet their needs according to your riches and glory. God, I pray that our hearts would be moved by mercy and justice to be a part of these different things. God, where we're able and we can be a tangible meeting of a need, God, I pray that we would walk into that with faith and confidence. God, because you've never failed and you're not going to start today. And so we thank you and we pray a blessing over these ministries and these people. God, would you protect them? Would you provide for them? God, would they know how much you love them and are with them? In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.